This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Pham, and with me, a special guest, Eric Manahan. Oh, look. Did I do it?
Perfect.
Yeah. All right, man. So this is part of the podcast where I let our guest, which is yourself, to introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers out there of where you are, where you're heading, where you've been in the past, you know, all that good stuff. Just a little synopsis.
Okay, I can do that. I think I can do that. As you said, I'm Eric Manahan. I am essentially, I'm the Matt Black Studio. I'm making a game called Lucid. It's a love letter to like my childhood gaming experiences, like those, I don't know, like the SNES era, like the 32-bit era, kind of platforming Metroidvania. I've been affectionately calling it the world's first Celestoidvania because of the heavy Celeste influence. But yeah, I've been doing game dev as a hobby for, I don't know, for like 10 years. I used to be an architect and I was doing it then as like a hobby, and architecture sucks the soul out of every living thing in a 10 mile radius. So I was really not enjoying it. And my little side project, my little bedroom project, Lucid, started picking up some steam with support from my fiance. She was just like, go for it. Like, she helped me pull the trigger. And a few years later, we're talking to you, Brandon.
Geez, all right, what a journey. Believe it or not, you're like kind of my second architect turned developer. Yeah, it was a good friend back at Turtle Rock, but his entry was back in Valve and Half-Life, where they were very open to other disciplines coming in. One of the first, right, 20 years ago. And he ended up, you know, working on Left 4 Dead, Left 4 Dead 2. But yeah, I mean, that's actually an amazing journey. So you understanding that you went through the schooling, college route, dedicated a good portion of your adult life to architect. So when exactly did you feel, is it just like the industry started like, hey, this is not exactly how I felt?
Yeah, that's okay. Pretty much. Yeah, man. Yeah, I went to school for the 5-year program. For anyone that cares architecture, you either have to do like 4-year, then go back and take a test, or you go to a 5-year program, you don't have to take some tests. So I did that. And the schooling portion was awesome. I love the concepts, the design. It teaches you how to like think about, you know, traversing through spaces and color and shape, all that fun stuff. That was awesome. I really loved that. Then you enter the workforce and then it changes, because then you have to deal with like clientele. And I happened to stumble into high-end residential in New York City. And there is a very specific kind of person that you deal with a lot. And it was just kind of oil and water. My personality just really didn't vibe. And I just always felt wrong and out of place. And I met some like really cool people, like coworkers, but for the vast majority of my experience, it was pretty miserable. So yeah, I fell out of love. I'm gonna like this, and I tried to for the longest time, and it just never worked.
How many years did you?
About 10 plus ish, like you did give or take, with like interns and stuff. But,
that is a sentence. I can totally relate to that. I mean, longtime listeners know kind of my story, but as a background, I always felt it doesn't matter what industry. I think as a creative, I think back, my college years were the most fun in terms of the purity of it. It's like the art, you know, just making a game.
It's like pure art, yeah.
But going to the industry, it's like you said, you know, the political side of things, and it became less, as you climb the ladder, it becomes less and less about the art. It becomes managing a lot of people, right? Dealing with a lot of people. And the funny thing is, yeah, and but like we found like really lifelong friends as well, right? The guys in the trenches are good. But exactly. Like, yeah, anything outside of that was very deterring of our creative output. So it was a very similar journey. And a lot of people, I think, in AAA have the same exact feeling. A lot of what you see in games is that a return to more indie, more side projects, hustles, smaller teams, you know, just more
it's input. Like less, a little more like honed in creative vision, a team of, I've been doing my very best to work with people I are super talented and I respect, and but on the secondary, that's secondary, but first is get along with and can like hold a conversation and just enjoy being around. That was a big priority to the little team that I've been developing behind the scenes.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the heart of it, man. We're talking about, you know, the passion project. So when exactly did you start tinkering? I mean, similar, you know, I'm guessing with different, completely different tool sets, right? But like, sort
of. Yes and no.
Really? Are you guys using the same Maya Mac? I thought you had like your own, like, was it AutoCAD or like?
My bad. Tool sets, like literal tool sets.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I know the one I'm using for the game I'm making, you're right, like very different tool sets. I've seen Maya used in architecture. I've seen like Rhino, Maya, 3D Max. Yeah. I'm a 2D guy.
Okay. Oh, you're the straight up sketch guy. Yeah, oh my God. Even more impressive. So you're just hand drafting these things, blueprinting?
Oh, okay. They start as sketches and then I turn them into tiny little pixels. I push pixels all day.
Okay. So when you started to kind of rediscover yourself, right? Explain to the good people when exactly this hobby festered, like into.
Oh man, good question. It actually started in studio. Studio is kind of your architecture in school. That's like your main class. Like you care a lot about studio. You live in studio, actually. You have no social life as an architecture student. And it was late. I think it was like maybe my last year. Or second to last year, but it was super late at night, like 3 a.m, and I was trying to rush to a deadline, and I was like burnt out, and I was like, I need to take a break. And I start reading some articles on Destructoid, and I stumble upon an article about a demo to this little pixely Metroidvania game called Iconoclast, and it was like this alpha build of this game I've never heard of, and it looked gorgeous. And I played it. I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. And I like read the article further. It's made by one guy. I'm like, get out of here. It must've been my like sleep deprived brain that was like, you should email this person and just talk to them. And I would never do that. It's just, it's not my thing. But, so I email him and he responds and he gives me all this information about programs and how you get into it, how you learn. And so I just kind of started picking at it, and this little hobby I kind of like got consumed, and I would be at work and I would just like be on forums, and I started in Game Maker, so I would just kind of read forum after forum after forum about coding, about Game Maker, about learning pixel art, and I just kind of like submerged myself in the industry, even though I wasn't in it. I also fell in love with, I don't know if you remember that documentary. It was like Indie Game, the documentary that following us. Yeah. Meat Boy and
the original indie guys.
Yeah. And that I would watch that just like on repeat, as I was working on Lucid in my bedroom, like late to the hours. But yeah, I was like romanticizing, like making my game. I never ever thought at the time I would be here. It was always just kind of like making a little project in the corner of my apartment in New York City. But yeah, so that's how it started.
I mean, it definitely, it's resonating. I think a lot of what's funny is you kind of shortcut, even though you went the, you had a whole different professional life, right? You bypass, you know, another loan, you know, another set of schooling, which, you know, I as many would say they don't regret, but you know, it does cost a lot. I mean, those are expensive friends, essentially, that you're making, right?
Architecture was a very expensive piece of paper, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. But like, you know, I think because of your maturity at the time of maybe in your drunken burnout state, you basically, you know, asking someone and they give you like the outline of like, this is what you need to do, is like actually what's missing to a lot of, I think, young kids out of high school, right? They don't have that mentor or know where to go. I would hope with online resources now, it's easier than ever to reach out to people. But I think back then, if I were to have that mentality, it would have been still difficult, right? To kind of do that cold call thing. I would have been... Yeah, it would have been hard to avoid college, basically. I know some friends that have, like a lot of these guys who came into the industry, self-disciplined, such as yourself, superstars. You know, they just have that mentality. Completely debt-free, super jealous. But like it is a gift once you discover something, like an easier route, for sure.
I agree. It's a lot of, from what I've read and like, other people I've talked to who I admire and look up to and want to emulate, it's very, a through line seems to be like a very go proactive, make the first move and like, don't be shy. And I've tried to, push that, idea forward. A lot of, the friends in the Lucid Discord, or they ask, like, you know, questions, how do you do X, Y, Z, this, and I'm like, never be afraid to ask. Oh, I'm always here. But also, if you have other games you want to be a part of or like, or just email them. Like, not, I don't know, 6-7 times out of 10, they respond. Like, they want to talk and they want to help and make the industry bigger and better.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many resources, like you mentioned, Discord, online communities.
Yeah.
To constantly.
YouTube is godsend. Yeah. Like, I've learned more through YouTube than I think I did at university.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everyone's so giving for knowledge and information, and the access is there for anyone, really. I would love to kind of discuss and dive a little deeper in the transitional, right? I'm guessing you still had your full-time thing, you're going through a crafting kind of discovery, right? To just get better at techniques. I'm thinking I would love to kind of hear more of that arc of, all right, sure, you know, I'm diving in. How long was that exactly before you eventually dedicated more time?
It feels like a long time. It feels like it was 10 years. It started around 2013 is when I sent that email and just started tinkering. And it was just such tinkering. I was just like blind and dumb and just poking things and doing things wrong. And that happened for a while. I didn't start to like kind of feel like a good grasp until maybe like 2015, 16. And so I'm doing architecture. I'm applying everything I learned in school and learning how to do it in the real world. But I can't say I regret architecture school or going that route, because it gave me so many like principles and design tenets that I applied into game design. And like, for a quick example, it's just like a floor plan. You have to like lay it out and space your progression in a very deliberate way, trying to coerce or influence people to move through the space the way you intend. Yeah. And all you have to do is flip that on its axis, and then you have a side scroller, and you just kind of do the same principles in a on a platformer, and those ideas transfer really well. So I did that for a while, but then around 2017, 18, I noticed it was becoming like, it was all encompassing, and it was starting to affect my relationships and
work, and I never thought I would actually pursue it. So I had to like pump the brakes, went on a hiatus for a long time. And that's when the crippling depression from the industry really started to sink in. It was really bad. It was like, just like you didn't, you know, there's like no end in sight. You don't know what you're going to do. And I was just laying on the floor one night and I'm just staring up. I'm like, I don't know what to do. And my fiance was like, you should pick Lucid back up. It made you so happy. I'm like, are you sure? Because like I did it all the time. And she's like, you need to do something you like. Like, just go do it again. So I picked it back up. I wanted to learn Unity anyways. So I rebuilt it from the ground up in Unity. And then I started making pixel art. And this whole time I was doing pixel art just like on the side for fun, like not game related at all. So my pixel art skills kind of kept leveling up as well. And there was a few pixel art posts on Instagram that really just kind of took off and it got some eyes on the project. And yeah, that's when it really started to pick up some steam. And that's when it was like, I think this might actually have some legs. And then, yeah. And then she said, yeah, go for it.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How was, you know, COVID happened? I don't know if you knew. What was that like? Did that accelerate this process? Because yes. Now you have more of a, okay.
Yeah, it definitely did. Yeah. Now I'm thinking about it, it totally did. It was one of those work from homes where work from home was like the greatest thing for me. I just like,
that is not a thing, right? Remote working is not a thing at all.
It is definitely not a thing they like. They want you in the office. They tried pulling us into the office so hard, and I just like, no, I'm not not doing it. Can't make so I was able to get my work done as quickly as possible. And what's great is once it's done, it's done and you submit it at the end of the day. And then in the between, I'm like, oh, I have all this time to work on Lucid. So I got a lot of work done on my off hours at work.
Yeah. I think that was I think that was a plus from that period because it was crippling. I think for a lot of people forced to not go anywhere. But for those who use it as an opportunity, I saw a lot of people thriving.
My fiance is one of them. It's definitely a personality type. Some people, like you said, thrive being around people, seeing people and having that routine. And I was... using the word fortunate is really weird, but I was not that, and I thrive being home alone and just working. So it benefited the work situation was a benefit to me. But it's hard talking it, giving it like a positive spin when COVID was so terrible. But I don't know, a silver lining was I got to stay home and be with my fiance and my dogs and work. And oddly enough, a lot of relationships with friends strengthened. You got a new appreciation for like your crew, and you have like text threads that were just dead for a while reemerged, and new rekindling high school friendships and stuff. But I don't want to sit here and praise COVID too much, but
Well, yeah. It's a sentiment I think has been echoed a lot ever since. I think everyone had an existential kind of what do you call it? Consideration, yeah. at the very least, right? Like everyone was just like, do I want to work 8 hours a day away from it? I want to commute 2 hours? You know, everyone were changing careers or not quitting jobs in a large part, switching industries like yourself. Mm-hmm.
Did you know anybody? Because I had a handful of friends who did that. They, even architecture for sure, they like jumped the ship and now they're doing like streaming illustrations, game dev, I don't know, jewelry making. Do you have any friends that did?
I talk at length. I think the one who are serious are doing really well after the switch. The ones who were kind of like gung-ho and didn't really think it through are kind of regretting it. It's like, oh, maybe I should go back, because now they're going back in the office and they're meeting these people where they didn't care about earlier. So I'm seeing regrets, but there was a lot of people at then, because we were getting like government checks and people's like, you know, and people were not in the industry. It's like, man, I can pay more of this than my regulars. I still a lot of bartender friends or like, you know, hospitality industries, you know, it was pretty much everything that you can read on the stats. I was hearing it directly or second connections or whatever. But overall, I think it was good because for those, it was a great time for everyone to experiment, right? Just to at least get the curiosity out and have no regrets. Even if they failed or succeed, right?
I might be totally butchering this, but I think it's a European thing, but it's pretty American that we have to like kind of decide what we want to do so early, and then you kind of have to just run with it. And I believe in more European cultures, they have a little bit more breathing room to figure out what they want to do. They're not like locked in step right out of college.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely something we can borrow from there, but we do have all the best companies over here.
Oh yeah.
So there is an outline. I have friends too. I was like, oh, in Italy, you work 2 hours a day. I was like, all right, when was the last tech company that came out of Italy? It's like nothing's coming out of there. All right. Yeah. Even our pizza is rivaling them. So.
Dude, oh, I got spoiled. But living in New York was, you go anywhere else and you're like, you call this pizza?
Exactly. So I was like, I get it. And I think, you know, to each their own and whatever your focus is, but there is, you know, to get things done, you got to work.
Big time.
It just really depends. The passion behind it has to be there. And I'm totally a believer in that. It's like something's missing. You got to think about what else, right?
100%. I work so much harder and longer now that I'm working on something I give a shit about.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, the hours are ridiculous. If you told anyone, like if you had like an employer and you had to work these hours, like that is harassment. You need to leave. That is not good. But when you're doing it for yourself, it's like really rewarding, fulfilling, and like it's hard to go to sleep because you don't want to stop.
Yeah, it's something that you know, I didn't switch industry. I stuck to it, right? Mm-hmm. Went to college for game art and design. Went into industry as game art and design. But because of the other factors, it was wearing me down. And I went through a similar crisis. I think it's like when you hit your 30s or something, you're like, hey, what am I doing with my life? It's like a quarter life crisis, right? Uh-huh. And it was more of a return of a reminder of my youthful self. You know, it's like, hey, man, you went into this because you like, and you forget your way a bit, I think, because of bills and responsibilities and, you know, hanging out with a girlfriend or whatever, right?
Your North Star kind of gets muddy or like blurry.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, I would love to think that most people are able to correct their path, and maybe COVID on a global scale did that, but a lot of people just carried on Like I was meeting people in late 40s, 50s, just burn out, and they just clocking out in games and making games, right? So it was like, yeah. So it was they just got numb, I think. And it was just easier to stay numb than to, you know, try hard and be disappointed again because of other factors besides work, right? It's just people, hungry people, you know, toxic people or whatever.
That was something I'm so bad at. I'm so bad at doing the office politics stuff.
I can't do it either.
Dude.
I have no patience.
I was always told, like, just, I was always told, you have an eye for this. You just gotta, like, kiss ass. I'm like, I don't do that. I just can't do it. I won't do it. And they're like, well, then you're not going to get promoted. I'm like, what does that say about the industry? And like,
huh? Yeah. That's it. That's, I mean, and of course, that's your manager. Or it's always the asshole. So it makes it harder. But yeah, same thing, man. I think creative industry especially have very similar issues. The people who can make the difference want to create. And the people who likes power get promoted. Usually
100%.
Yeah.
The missus, she works for I don't know if I'm allowed. She works for a super prestigious visual effects company, like, the creme de la creme. Yeah. And, like over just hearing, her meetings and like the ego is like dead. Like everything before that, all like the lower tiered companies, they like want to have this bravado and there's all this like political nitpicking and like sides. But like when you're at the top, like you don't have to have that ego, and they just respect everybody. Like it is something to see. Like I didn't think a company could operate this way, and it's super impressive. And like they're supportive, and it was like uplifting to know that like there are companies out there that like put the work first and like put the egos aside.
That's good. Yeah. They probably went through a bunch of destruction states to get to that point.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Quick. How did they get there? I'd like to think.
But getting back to you, man. So, you know, you went through this period, COVID accelerated, finally pulled the trigger, right? And during that time of development, were you building up like a community for reassurance? What was your kind of like support to kind of go forth with, you know, making it more of a commitment? What was the factor? Yeah,
that's a great question. I was definitely building a community, and I think it was kind of happening without me knowing it. And then when I started to realize what was happening, I had to give it a home. I think it started on Instagram. I was super active on Instagram, and I was befriending a lot of these super talented people and really fun. And it really started to blossom when like it was starting to pick up steam, and I needed to, I was like, I think it's time to make a Discord. I think I have enough interaction to warrant a place for everyone to hang out. And when I did, everyone came by, and it's one of the most, if without that Discord, I'd go crazy. But everyone's super supportive, and they help each other with their art. They've done projects together. They've been super interested in Lucid. Incredibly supportive and uplifting. And even on they sometimes operate like white blood cells to a wound. Mm-hmm. Well, or say like, I'll make a post, and there's always somebody out there that'll be like, this pixel's off and it's garbage and it sucks and you suck too, and you should just quit. And you're like, cool, man. Thanks. I poured
get out of your mom.
And by the way, and your mom's ugly too. Thank you. But yeah, when that happens, I'm fortunate enough to have a community that'll come in and just kind of like bring positivity, and it's infectious. And once people start seeing positivity, it's so interesting to watch. If the few first comments are positive, the following comments are positive. If it starts off negative, it just starts trickling with more toxic. Yeah. Operational side, the community has been awesome in that sense. But I don't think I kind of created it like intentionally. It sort of just kind of organically grew. But I'm very grateful for them.
Yeah. I think I think that's one of the hardest things, like working in isolation, especially being a one-man army, right? Having some type of community to push you along, especially through the tough times.
Yeah.
I would love to hear more about that. I mean, like, as a creative, you know, hit roadblocks. You're like, is this worth it? What am I doing the right things? Should I keep pushing? What was the most consistent thing that you would fall back on to kind of continue to go forward and finish the goals?
I would say if ever I'm feeling kind of tired or something's not working and I'm getting frustrated, I'll usually either just type into the general chat of the Discord, being like, hey guys, what are you guys working on? How's everyone's week going? And then getting out of my head, hearing what they're going through, taking a break and helping them with their project if they have design questions, and just kind of switching gears and giving back to a community that's given so much to me, that really recharges my drive. Aside from that, what really helps is I put on Studio Ghibli movies. I watch.
Ah, there you go.
Dude, it's just something about those movies where I just like every frame, and there's just so much passion, and I want to channel that love for their art form. And it just gives me such motivation. I'll watch Princess Mononoke and repeat. I'll watch Spirit Away. I'll watch even Totoro. Just almost any Ghibli movie makes me happy and ready to work.
Yeah.
That's what I do a lot.
I recently went to like a quartet that were playing all their music.
What?
The music itself was funny. Yes. I went to the quartet. I live in Orange County. They had like a quartet. But at the same time, the composer was playing in Hollywood Bowl at that same time. I didn't know. I would have went. But it was nice and intimate. It was like candlelit quartet. And it was kind of
Oh, fun. That's awesome.
But the music, yeah, I get the same feeling just by listening to the music. It just has like a very jolly, like youthful, spiritual,
yes. Creative. I've been throwing around the term like optimistic melancholy.
Yeah.
An atmosphere that I've been trying to like inject into every nook and cranny of Lucid. But I think they Ghibli do it in spades, like effortlessly. It's just so beautiful. Like almost all their movies have this like dichotomy of like beautiful nature and then war, and then like there's a gray middle ground of like the cycle, very cyclical, very but they encapsulate this sadness but also this optimistic like hopefulness, and it's a very inspiring to me.
Yeah, it's definitely art feeds into art for sure. And yeah, I do the same exact thing either through the music or having some kind of animation going.
What other music do you listen to that gets you outside of Ghibli?
Man, so this is probably I train myself. I list it's like it's bad to say Kanye nowadays, but the original Kanye College Dropout, his first two albums was what I had on repeat in college, trying to finish the Demerill. So it like kind of triggers like a thing in me to like get back to that state of like, yeah, let's get into it. Usually if I want to get things done, I do that. Or just Ennio Morricone, the good, the bad, the ugly composer.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Gold? What's his, Ecstasy of Gold? You know, that kind of soundtrack. Just orchestra music usually gets me going.
Yeah. It sounds like you're into, orchestral music. Is that something you listen to a lot?
That and Kanye.
He just needs to do an orchestral album now and you'll
but something about orchestral music just makes me want to work. It's the same feeling you get when you go to Barnes and Noble, right? When you just they have the music going, he's like, I gotta read more books. I love reading books. Books are fantastic. And then you leave and they're like, I'll never read a book ever again.
Why would I ever read it when I could just listen to it? It's so stupid.
Yeah, it's so dumb. Why is it? I can't believe it still exists. Yeah. But every time I go through, I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad it's still around. And
yeah, man, like the coffee smell and that paper. Yeah, something about that paper.
They have that. Yeah. And speaking of architecture, they really nailed down that feeling.
Yes. That is, we did a case study on that. We studied the layout of like what they did in a Barnes and Noble. It was, everything was very intentional, and it was impressive. Like before architecture school and all my friends, I would go in and be like, "Oh dude, they did this and this." And they're like, "Eric, shut up. We do not care." I'm like, "Yeah, but look, they put this column here because of this." I'm like, "Shut up. I want my coffee and just shut up."
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Science.
But yeah, Barnes and Noble's a great design, a feat to like get you in a zone.
Yeah. So good. It makes you want to learn stuff. But yeah, there's something about that for sure that kind of gets me going, and I relate that to the music and the type of stuff. You know, Ghibli, like films like that, like I've seen a million times. I can play in the background. Yeah. But if it's like John Wick, I'm like, I get distracted. I'm like, this is not good. I'm just watching the movie five times.
Yeah.
It's like all the action. Yeah, I can't do action movies anymore. I get distracted too quickly.
Keanu, I threw on The Matrix thinking, I'm like, I've seen this 100 times. Yeah. I've just listened to it. And then, of course, it gets to Agent Smith. And I'm just like, do the finger thing. Do the finger thing.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah, it's certain tricks. Definitely works, I think, for all creatives, but yeah, some stuff are distracting for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, with Lucid, for those who don't know, right? For those just to kind of walk through, what was the motivation, the idea, you know, these feelings that we're kind of trying to conjure up? Like what was the inspiration for this? So the type of games that you've been playing that you're like, hey, I've always wanted to make this.
Yeah. So definitely Lucid, I had mentioned that at some point I kind of did a rebuild. So before the rebuild, it was a way more standard or typical run-of-the-mill Metroidvania affair. I love Super Metroid. So Super Metroid's DNA is heavy into it. I also love Mega Man X. So that's in there too. You'll see, if anybody sees any of the footage that's probably playing, I hope you can see the love letter to those two. But then what really kind of set it apart, and I found the quote unquote, the fun, is that after the hiatus and I went back and rebuilt it in Unity, I had played Celeste and I had played Mario Odyssey and even the Spider-Man 4 or Spider-Man on PS4. And I learned some new things. And one of those tenets was mobility has to be as engaging as quote unquote, like the gameplay or what I like combat. And because what you're doing from instance to instance of combat is moving. And why are you wasting time having that movement not be fun? Because in Mario Odyssey, just moving around feels great. Spider-Man moving around feels great. And then, so movement was a huge, big, big thing. And then Celeste was, I don't know if you've played Celeste, but there's this portion where you jump and if you hit these little nodes, your resources refresh, like your jump resources. And that was like, and also in the Messenger, that does it too. But that was so fun to me. And I started incorporating that into the new design of Lucid. And I was making this course in my Unity scene, and I replayed this course like for an hour and a half, just trying to do it faster and faster and faster and faster. And I was having so much fun. And all of a sudden it was like light bulb. I'm like, oh my God, this is the game. And I just ran with that. And it's been work. Every idea kind of just kept slipping in so well. So yeah, Super Metroid, Mega Man X, Celeste, and then the world of, like colorful roster of characters like is like the Zelda influence. I love Zelda. I love the world they build. And then I'm a 90s baby, or I guess 80s, 88. But I grew up on that. I don't know if the audience or you know what I'm talking about, that there was a 90s anime kind of feel. Like if you watch Toonami, there's just this vibe around that 90s anime. And it kind of links to the Ghibli thing we were talking about earlier. But there's this vibe that I love, and I wanted to inject that into this game. So between that gameplay and that vibe, the music, that those are all those things that are kind of circling and you swish it around and you get lucid.
Nice. Like a lot of the difficulties for even professionals and indie is the getting started part, right? To get momentum going, to continue with it. Were there like, you know, special programs to kind of help you brainstorm, put ideas? Was it just Sketchpad? Like what exactly kind of helped you kind of put all these ideas together to kind of filter through and actually get something totally, you know, meaningful to kind of jump off of?
It's kind of old school, man. Pen and paper.
Pen and paper.
Yeah, I had, so had
a whole notebook of stuff.
Dude, where is it? Oh, it's right here. This notebook is... Oh, no, it's not this one. But I had a little Moleskine, and I would... On my breaks, on my lunch breaks in architecture, I'd go to Starbucks or Barnes and Noble, actually. And I would just write down my ideas, do my sketches. And I think that kind of comes from the architectural background. I was very pen and paper, like doing sketches. So it was very easy to, it was already a habit. But then for programs, I started out early in with a free pixel art program called Piskel. It was a web pixel art on a website. And I started there. Eventually I got into A-Sprite, and I can't, it's not paid advertisement for A-Sprite, but I feel like I should be. I love their program, and I'm constantly telling everyone, if you want to do pixel art, pick up A-Sprite. It is fantastic for stationary pixel art or animation, both. It does both. And I live in that program. So yeah, sketches, and then I go into there and transfer the sketches to the pixel art, and then the pixel art goes into Unity, and we have a game. But yeah, it's nothing too fancy. I wish I had a program that kind of answers that question better, but you know, it's just some pixel art program and a sketchbook. Mm-hmm.
Like, I know initially you kind of went into this, I want to do this. It's it can't be done with one person. In any part of this journey, did you ever consider partnering up? You know, seeing people, Discord community, people interested. I'm sure people reached out, I can help out.
Yes.
What was this?
Yes. I thank you. Everyone who reached out, thank you, thank you. But I've gotten hundreds of emails of like, hey, I don't know if you've gotten a sound designer or a musician. I'm like, I have. I mean, a part of me is like, if you really looked at the project, you would have known, because I paste it all over, that I'm working with my fiance. She's doing the music. I'm working with a good friend, Andy, but get tons of musicians reaching out. But yes, working with someone. It was really important to me for the longest time to be a solo dev. And I've been a solo dev for a long, long time. I just kind of romanticized. It was just kind of like all me. It was just me in this program, and this is, it's me. But then, like you said, at some point I realized that it was just what I wanted to make. If I did it all by myself, it would take exponentially longer. On top of which, I would have to learn more things. It would take more time. And, I slowly began, outsourcing a little bit of here, a little bit there. And I have a bunch of, I've been forming a team, and they're right now they're kind of like outside contractors, but hopefully if this Kickstarter does well enough, it could be more of a full-time or just get more work. Cause I really enjoy working with this team. They're so talented. I have two musicians that have been doing phenomenal work. I have a coder friend who is a wizard. He can make anything that it blows my mind. Who else? We have a promo artist, Psycho Ramen. He makes, breathes life into my characters. I really enjoyed working with people. So I'm trying to make this Kickstarter as successful as possible so we can work together and make Lucid as big and as powerful as it possibly can be.
All right. Well, let's talk about this Kickstarter. So, you know, although I think for a few years, maybe 20, I think it got really big in 2015, 2016. The idea of straight to the customer funding, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And then a bunch of scam artists took notice.
Dude.
And it kind of ruined that a bit. And there were others that I think were trying. I think at some point there was like guys from Obsidian teaming up to kind of make their own. And it's more like an investor version of it. But I don't think it did anything from time to time. And then Kickstarter came back even stronger with a lot of board games, analog yes. games, card yes. games. A lot of games that you go to Target. started in Kickstarter are on their shelves, which was yep. amazing. And then, you know, now you're starting to hear more like serious indie games are still having success on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm sure like you guys were, as you guys were planning this, like what were the avenues that you were thinking and where is Kickstarter now with all this, just as kind of like a casual observer, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's an ecosystem for sure. And it's really an interesting one. Cause like anything you think you see it and you're like, oh, that's that. And then you get in there and there's like a billion rules and regulations to like, if you follow these, you'll do better. And here's some tips and tricks. So Kickstarter, like you had said, I didn't know there was like scam artists. I didn't know that was a thing. And people were asking like, so how do we know you're not going to like take the money and run? And I was like, that's an option. But I basically just have like, just look, please look at the work. The amount of love that's into it. Like there's just no way, it's just not going to happen. On top of which I have partnered with a publisher and I'm like contractually obligated to make something. So on paper, I have to make something. And also, this is my life. I would never, ever do that. Also, I'm not a scumbag. But Kickstarter is an interesting one. It's I'm trying to make it so that it's very incentive. People are incentivized to back the Kickstarter for like exclusive stuff. Yeah. So a big part of Kickstarter is like what makes it special? Like why do it now? And usually it's bought with like a quote unquote like a discounted price or a bunch of like Kickstarter exclusive in-game items, be it skins or talismans that are like items in games that alter your player character, wallpapers, physical media, albums. Well, I can say for Lucid's Kickstarter, there's a bunch of digital rewards, little goodies that people will get. And it's going to be a big illustrated digital map of the world. And it's made by this super talented artist. I hope I'm saying your name right, buddy. Hugo Piera, I think that's how you say his last name, but he's super talented. Yeah, we haven't announced it yet, but I think by the time this airs, we will have. If not, whatever, it's a surprise. But yeah, super awesome digitally designed map. Also, there's going to be a prequel comic done by Ray. His last name's Cadbury. Sorry, Ray. Love you, buddy. But he's an awesome illustrator making this beautiful prequel comic. There's also going to be a Lucid album. What else is there? An art book. And then a bunch of wallpapers, and that's just the, like every backer gets those digital goodies. And then on top of that, there's I misspoke. At a certain tier, you get those. I forget, but yeah, there's a bunch of incentives and goodies, with Kickstarter that make people want to be like, feel like a part of this project because, they're going to have an intimate relationship with me being the dev. They have like a direct line of like, hey, what if it did this? Or, hey, I don't like the way this works. So it's for people that really want to feel like a part of a passion project. At least that's what, from my optics, that's what Kickstarter is to me.
For real. Yeah. I think, the industry itself, just naturally, we like stuff. I don't know if anyone ever made this connection, but to me, like Kickstarter, I feel had a lot to do with the streaming revolution.
Interesting.
That's my
take. How so?
I just came up with it.
Yeah, well,
I mean, as, as a streamer and they get their donations through Twitch, you know, there's a lot of contribution. I want to be a part of this, right? You know, there's a lot of like support directly from viewers and customers.
Yeah.
To me, that didn't exist until Kickstarter came along. You know, even Patreon, you know, a lot of what they do is modeled after what Kickstarter, you know, created.
Yeah.
And
I can see that.
Well, just to mention, you know, either good or bad, right? Speaking of scams, I still think it's a scam. Star Citizen, you know, recently crossed $600 million of contributions. It's hitting, it's breaking Guinness World Records of, you know, the highest donated game ever, right?
Jesus.
So there's a lot of people out there, and you're getting these questions, oh, you're a scammer. It's like, I want to give, but I've been so hurt and abused. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
But like, people like stuff. They like wanting to be a part of something, I think more now than ever, right?
Yeah.
To have a voice, be a part of communities. And I think it's grown exponentially. Even Kickstarter, I think they've grown in other industries, but for games, it wasn't as crazy. It's not making headlines as it used to, right? But the community of giving or being a part or donating or backing is got to be 100 times or 1,000 times bigger than it was even at the height of Kickstarter in 2015.
I think you're absolutely right.
Streaming, yeah, just because of streaming.
Yeah, I think it's like a holistic like an ecosystem of, like you said, like everything kind of feeds into each other. So the ideas of Kickstarter and the community then like feeds into like, oh, what we should be doing, community and streaming, and then do that with Discords, and everyone kind of feeds their ideas into each other.
It's all Kickstarter. They should have licensed all that stuff. Them. That was all of them. I can't find that contribution to anyone because a lot of before that was just professional gamers. Mm-hmm. But no one was really streaming to that extent. I mean, yet YouTube sort of, but like not to the extent of how big it is now. I don't think at all.
Yeah, I was late to the streaming like biome. I lived on YouTube and I don't frequent Twitch. Like my favorite Twitch guy would probably be Maximilian Dude. And I didn't know he streamed. I thought he was a YouTube guy. And they're like, no, he streams and then records to YouTube. And I was like, you can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Twitch is really interesting. I've peeked my head in and I feel very like outsider in because I'm old, but
I think I'm part of that for sure. I don't get it. Yeah. I'll say it to that extent. It's like people just give me money for Monica.
I still like, what are bits?
What are bits
of what? Yeah.
What's and a bit? I know Twitch is still king of everything, but like I keep hearing how they're awful to their top creators. It's like every other week, it's like, you know, banning this and that. I was like, what is this going on?
Yeah. Yeah,
they just make up the rules as they go.
I'm very outside. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know
either. I really should get in there and know what is going on, but my old man brain's like, it's new and different, and I'm scared.
I think I'm past the age of embracing that.
Yeah. I mean, I've done like some pixel art streaming and some game dev streaming, and me and my buddy did some like Let's Play streaming, and actually that kind of fostered the Lucid Discord community. It was a really good way to like connect, but it was never like a not trying to like monetize. It was more just like, what do you guys want to do? You want to hang out and play video games?
Yeah.
They did.
Well, just charge a entry fee. Then you got your Twitch. But yeah, it's a lot of just to speak into Kickstarter and stuff. I mean, you know, obviously I talk to a lot of people that come on here, and you know, Kickstarter is still the go-to if you want to connect directly to your base.
100%.
And then what I usually see is that, you know, eventually maybe that branches to Patreon or something, but like there's a lot of validation still with Kickstarter. I mean, the system works, right? It is a lot more self-promotion than it used to be. And it still has a very large community there. I mean, they have
really
the front page, the feature, you know, they do help, it seems, right?
It's so much bigger than I thought. Like, I've heard stories and the board games, like you'd said, and just like seeing what they, you had mentioned earlier that it was much smaller before. And I think you're right, because in researching and trying to figure out how to structure Lucid's Kickstarter, I looked at older and other Kickstarters, like, what did you guys do? What works? What are some ideas? And just looking at the numbers, Hyperlight Drifter, that game, I mean, I love that game. And it was huge, but seeing like their Kickstarter page, it's so minimal in compared to today's like standard, like what you need on a page. Like very little graphics, very little anything. And it did gangbusters for the time. And now it's, I mean, I don't want to diminish its achievements, but like other games, like you've said, are now hitting like $1 million marks. And it didn't even hit $1 million. It hit like 600, like only 600,000. But if it was today's thing, that game would have done like 3 million or something. But yeah, it was much smaller back then.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exciting for sure. I think Fortnite, I think, ushered a lot of gamers and naturally go feed into the ecosystem that has been building since. Like, our industry have grown. So like, if you're a gamer, like comics, you like things.
Yeah, right.
So
pop culture.
Exactly, right? It's just welcome to our matrix.
Do you think that the gaming the consumer gaming landscape, I don't know if it's an age thing, but do you think that AAA burned us so many times that people are like, I'm going directly to the stores, screw these middlemen that are clearly trying to milk and dime me for everything I'm worth. I want to support a passion project that usually has an ending better result than whatever AAA is churning out for the most part.
Yeah, I think
my bias is probably coming out.
No, I think your intuition is correct. AAA is becoming synonymous with day one patches, bugs, incomplete games. Mm-hmm. For that reason, I think the general consumer is a lot smarter now. Like, they understand. I'm surprised people out of the industry, when I talk to them, know what Unreal is. You know, they know like these terminologies that, unless you're a developer, you shouldn't know, right? And they're talking about this stuff where years ago I was trying to basically justify that I have a real job. You know what I mean? You're like, what? You work in the game? You play games all day? It's like, no, I don't. You know what I mean? And that's just a difference of, I think, maybe the last decade, right?
Yeah.
A lot have changed since.
Dude, if you told our parents what, well, actually, I have a story. There's a story of how I went to architecture. Essentially, my dad said, you don't want to go into game. You don't want to make games. If you want a family, you're going to want to make money, and you're not going to make money making games.
Yeah.
And he was only looking out for me because this was in like 95 or something.
Right,
and
right, yeah.
His, to them, it was like, they don't make money. Flash forward, like you said, 10 years or whatever. And it's like $1 billion industry, like surpassing the cinematic industry. Yeah. Oh my God, dude. Yeah.
And it just the path. I mean, there's still no requirement for schools anymore. If you want to get any of these jobs, you know, it's just the work speaks for itself.
Yeah.
So you can technically, if you're smart, spend your high schools learning all this stuff and get into the workforce at 18.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the salaries, you know, when you climb the ladder, is this, you know, a lot of respect, equivalent to like doctors, you know? you know, you go all the way to Facebook, to Google, to all these tech companies. They're paying bonkers for the same skill set. You know, it is a growing, and it's not just games. You learn these tools. You can use it in film and other industries now. Mm-hmm. So it's insane. The amount of people have grown so much that I am constantly surprised. The knowledge base, it's really reassuring that we are building the Matrix. Is this essentially that?
Yeah, man.
The Matrix is a video game, right? That's been my theory. So it's going to be ruled by a bunch of game developers. Scary, right?
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, game design is like the epitome of every art form. Like every single art form can be like injected into making a game, or some game can have it all in there. It's pretty wild.
It's getting there.
So yeah, I welcome our AI over, or not AI, our overlord. Game dev overlords.
It's the same thing, dude. AI game dev overlord. It's the same. Like, you think it's a coincidence that's all happening at once? Yeah. But dude, so you know, we're hitting an hour mark. So I want to kind of shut up, hand over the mic. It's been a great conversation. I want you to kind of throw the Twitter handles or X handles.
Oh yeah.
Instagram, the Discord channel. Where can people find your Kickstarter campaign? How can people support?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. This was like super last minute, but I'm so glad we got to talk. It's been really fun talking to you. Also, I never mentioned, are you wearing a Ken gi?
What? You don't wear this at home?
I mean, I put it on fits. Dress to the nines. I put pants on today.
It fits with the look. But this is me fighting the industry. This is a history with the podcast. You know, you're talking about burnout and stuff. This was built on burnout.
Awesome.
So that,
dude, idea, fight the power. I love it.
Fight the power.
But exactly. But yes. So yeah. Thanks for having me. My socials, like, I haven't spoken enough today. Biggest one, if you could please, everybody, please go to lucidkickstarter.com and hit the little notify me on launch button, please. It would be so, so awesome. I have poured my heart and soul into this game. Every penny I have, it feels like I'm all in, and I want to make this as best as I can and have the best people to do it. And with your help, we can make it happen. So yeah, please go to lucidkickstarter.com and follow along. I hope you'll enjoy it. So that's the big one. And then on Twitter, I think, I don't even know what my Twitter handle is. I think it's like the Matt Black. Let's see. Oh, my ex, sorry. Underscore the Matt Black, like MATTE, the material. You can find me there. And on Instagram, I'm just Matt Black Studio. I post a lot of updates, a lot of art, a lot of gameplay, mechanics, lore. Every post gets a little bit of lore. And we actually didn't touch much on it, but Dark Souls was a huge influence on me. I love FromSoft. And it's mostly not so much the difficulty portion, but the world building. I love telling story through environment and items, and so if you like lore, check out the Instagram and try to piece together the little tidbits I've been trickling out. But yeah, I also have a Facebook. There's a Discord. On all the socials, you can find the Discord. There's invite links, but yeah, we welcome you into the Discord. Everyone's super friendly. We have artists, we have animators, illustrators, musicians, programmers, like everybody there, and everyone shares their projects and help each other out. I have a good friend, Average Joe. He's making a game called Edge of Allegoria. And I had like 2 days, I was completely burned out, and he sent me a demo, and I spent the following 2 days like helping him make a combat system, and it was so freaking fun. But yeah, everyone's very involved with each other's work and supportive, so come hang out and talk nerd stuff with us. So yeah, that's my spiel. That's all I got.
Cool, man. I mean congratulations and finding happiness again. And it looks great, dude. And you know, we'll do as much as we can on this side to kind of make sure that all the links that you describe is in the post, so you guys can find it there. Give the support and everything. And it was really nice talking to you, Eric.
Same, man. I hope I can see you again sometime. It was super fun.
Well, yeah, we're friends for life, man. Don't worry about it.
Yes.
Cool. All right, guys. See you next week. Hello, everybody. Brandon here. I want to talk to you today about something very special. We've been on this wild ride together, haven't we? From my early days as a senior employee, feeling a bit lost, all the way to leading multiple studios, transitioning to smaller indie teams and to the mobile industry, and now running my own game studio for the last 6 years. Throughout this time, you've been here listening and learning along with me, sharing this never-ending journey of discovery. This year, I'm kind of on this quest of meeting serial studio founders, discussing acquisitions, or exploring what it takes to grow a studio to over 100 developers. I've always tried to find an exciting topic to delve into, and every year is a little different. The focus is a little different because that's where I am in my career currently, and I want to be able to share what I'm learning with you guys. So I've always been dedicated to asking the tough questions, bringing you insightful answers from industry leaders and experts. And now I want to share with you how I'm applying these answers to my own journey. This is why I'm excited to announce that for just $1.99 per month, you can now subscribe to our exclusive content series. These bonus episodes will give you a deeper look into my personal experiences and how I'm putting into practice what our esteemed guests are preaching. It's more of a personal side of the journey that I hope will show you that we're all in this together and we're all continuously learning. Whether you're a game developer, studio founder, or just a passionate gamer, there's something in it for everyone. By subscribing, not only will you gain access to this exclusive content, but you also be supporting the ongoing production of the regular programming. It helps keeps the lights on and ensures that I can continue bringing you top quality content and insight into the world of game development. The links to subscribe are in the description. Your support means the world to me and helps me keep doing what I love, sharing this journey with you. So show some love, hit that subscribe button, and let's continue this adventure together. Thank you all for your continued support. And as always, stay tuned for more exciting content. Until next time, this is Brandon, signing off.